600 spot on your dial. WICC, Bridgeport, Connecticut.
I'm Bud Finch, and I'll be back right after Andy Corona's news. Next, over the sound of New Haven, WELI.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Bob Steele of WTIC Hartford, speaking to you from the Army's Bradley Field in central Connecticut, where 25 or 30 big four-engine bombers have arrived in the past hour or so. More are coming in all the time.
The latest news from the WTHT Hartford Times newsroom.
Town Hartford, we bring you Hartford Speaks, transcribed. I'm Bob Maher. Here's Una King.
Well, you bright little spring boy, you're anticipating it a little bit, aren't you?
That's number 83, everybody, at WTIC, our Dickie Robinson Countdown Show. As we check out the top 100 records for 1967.
The Ken Griffin Show, WPOP.
From high atop Radio Mountain at 95.7, this is WBMI Hartford, Meriden. My name is Dan Bloom.
Connecticut Radio Memories, a series chronicling the first six decades of Connecticut's radio stations, as told by the people behind the microphones and behind the scenes. Episode 5, Insurance City Radio, more stories of Greater Hartford Radio.
Well, there was a Savitt Jewelers.
POMG, peace of mind guaranteed. At Savitt Jewelers, 35 Asylum Street, 35 seconds from Main, downtown Hartford.
And Bill Savitt also, in addition to his jewelry store on Asylum Street, also had a franchise to start a radio station, and that was the beginning of WCCC.
Listen to WCCC and hear about the Double E.
WCCC in Hartford.
Bill Hennessy.
Owned by the legendary Bill Savitt and his brother Max Savitt.
Well, Max and my dad were definitely a team.
Bill Savitt's daughter, Debbie Savitt, first.
My uncle was a lawyer and a judge, and I think he was very instrumental in going through the procedures in Washington to get the station to begin with.
He had his finger in everything. He and his brother Max Savitt, lawyer.
Jack Brooks.
The two of them owned the station.
He bought it in 1947 when I was 5, 6 years old. And the way he would build the audience was doing a lot for the community, which was really his signature. He was always thinking of the community first.
Bill Savitt was very, very interested in developing Hartford.
Ivor Hugh.
Since he had his store there. So he was always looking for ways in which to promote Hartford.
He was definitely a booster for downtown Hartford. He was a humanitarian before he was anything. In other words, anything he did had to have a piece of it that was saying thank you to the community or doing for the community. And I think that his philosophy for the radio station was to make it devoted to Hartford affairs.
We would have short interviews of the mayors of Hartford and the surrounding towns, that sort of thing.
And civic enterprise. And I think that the way I remember the WCCC was we cover central Connecticut.
We cover Connecticut's capital. Or Bill, God bless him, he would say, we cover central Connecticut,
Because Savitt owned it and he was a jeweler.
Bill Davies.
It stood for color, clarity, and cut. Three aspects of a diamond that noted its quality. And that's where the CCC came from.
He had three or four or five ways of using the initials. He was such a fantastic guy.
Well, I remember that it was in the Hotel Bond.
Debbie Savitt first.
And that it was downstairs there.
This is your good neighbor station, WCCC, 1290 on your dial with studios in the Hotel Bond. The time, 5:15.
Bill Hennessy.
We were down in the basement. You could always smell the station because the kitchen wasn't very far away, and whatever they were cooking, roast beef or whatever, it was a great place to be. If they were making their own bread, it was a delightful atmosphere, literally, to be surrounded by.
Ivor Hugh.
And we were at the Hotel Bond, and that was the hotel. So I had the opportunity, I had a program called The Green Room, and I'd have all the stars come down and record because they were upstairs. Everybody. I have had everybody from Eugene Normandy, Sir Thomas Beecham, Frank Sinatra, Nat King Cole.
Bill would listen to the station.
Jack Brooks.
Without fail. I remember at one time we had a fire, a smoke alarm, our air conditioning system in the Hotel Bond where the studios were. Apparently one of the belts began to smoke, and I had to turn it off, and that was the only air we got down there. We were in the basement of the Hotel Bond. And I called the fire department, number one, and I happened to mention on the air that there was this smoke problem, maybe a fire in the studio, but, we'll continue to broadcast. Well, he called on the phone. Don't tell the people there's a fire at the Hotel Bond. You'll scare everybody to death. Well, he was right, but it was a little lesson learned.
It's a daytime station, but that still meant that we were on the air 7 days a week, even though we signed off at sunset. There was only a 250-watt signal, 1290 on the dial.
We could only operate on the AM on daylight hours, sunrise to sunset. So in the wintertime, technically, we were only able to broadcast from 7 a.m. to 4:15 in the afternoon, which is one of the reasons they wanted to go to FM. The only thing is they couldn't make any money on FM. Nobody wanted to advertise on FM. Bill Savitt got dispensation to get us on the air at 6 a.m. every morning. But the signal between 6 a.m. and 7 o'clock in the winter months was so bad, you could barely hear it in Hartford, let alone anyplace else. As soon as the sun came up and the heaviside layer went up, our signal went out so people could hear it. He was an interesting guy. He was probably one of the most promotion-minded individuals you could possibly think of or hear of.
A, B, C, D, E, E.
Wait a minute, where does the double E come from?
Well, sir, you'll be hearing about the double E soon. As sturdy as a tree and sometimes even free, I think you'll want to see the great big double E.
Well, man alive and gosh by gee, I hope there isn't any fee to see and hear the double E.
Listen to WCCC for the double E revelation coming soon.
He just always understood that you can't sell them if you don't tell them. And so he built everything he did based on that philosophy.
A POMG sign above the door and a red carpet in front of the door. That's Savitt Jewelers.
At Savitt, you get POMG, peace of mind guaranteed. Remember, no sales final at Savitt.
His POMG, peace of mind guaranteed, is 35 steps from Main Street. I still remember him to this day. That's how much of an impression those sayings were.
Now a Thanksgiving message from Bill Savitt.
It seems man's nature to gripe about a lot of things in everyday life and to take a lot of our blessings for granted. I've been thinking of things we should be thankful for right here in Hartford, and here are a few. Our many, many churches representing many faiths, all sharing a common belief in God and a brotherhood of man. The wealth of God-given talent we have in government and in our active Chamber of Commerce. The impressive number of fine colleges and schools we have for a city our size. Our great insurance companies and diversified industries that keep our city.
The other thing about him is the day after Thanksgiving was a very big shopping day in downtown Hartford when there was G. Fox and Sage Allen and all of the stores unlike today. But of course, naturally, the traffic was awful. There were never enough places to park. There was never enough room. There was bumper-to-bumper traffic. One of our duties as a public service on radio was to tell people, you know, about what was going on in downtown Hartford. So we naturally told them about, you know, traffic was heavy, parking was difficult, but shoppers were here and it was a cheerful time. But every time we mentioned that traffic was heavy or parking difficult, he would call up and say, "Don't tell them. They won't come downtown to shop." So again, another lesson learned.
He wanted them coming his
yes,
store.
Yes, yeah. By all means, yeah. By all means. Well, he was very wise. He knew that his store didn't bring him downtown. He knew that G. Fox brought them downtown and that Sage Allen brought them downtown, and he was going to get residual traffic. Yeah, they would come to him, but he was not the destination for the shoppers in those days. G. Fox was the destination. So wisely, he was very kind to a major competitor, obviously. Mm. But a person or an institution that was very valuable to him as a businessman. But that's how much he was listening. He paid very close attention.
Again, Bill Hennessy.
Ivor Hugh was the music director.
Yeah, I started radio. In Hartford after I came to this country from England in 1947. I was music director.
Again, Jack Breitman.
Ivor Hugh was our music director and on the air in the afternoons and in summertime in the evenings.
And I had a classical program, the Sage Allen Concert Hour, sponsored by Sage Allen.
Take a tip from Sweet Angie, the Christmas tree angel, and shop at Sage Allen, the Christmas tree store.
Get gifts for your loved ones, the maybe and must ones.
Shop at Sage Allen, the Christmas tree store. Sage Allen, the Christmas tree store.
Mildred Allen, marvelous woman, had to approve of all my programming. She was wonderful to work with, but she loved classical music. And we had good afternoon, good music, good morning, good music. And we had a sports program, and I can't remember all the people who did that. They put a notice out that Ivor Hugh didn't do the sports because I didn't really know American sports. And I could never remember the names of the, you know, the name of the teams. The Boston playing somebody, and I said, Boston 5, other team 2. I couldn't think of it. So there's a big memo saying, don't let Ivor do the sports anymore.
He pretty much programmed WCCC, and if Savitt didn't like it, he would hear from Bill on the telephone. Ivor would get records from the record promoters constantly.
Jack Lenhoff.
Oh, man, Ivor Hugh. I remember when Ivor was with CCC, and one night the record plugger from Columbia Records brought in a record sung by Marlene Dietrich. Song called He's Too Old to Cut the Mustard Anymore.
He's too old to cut the mustard anymore.
And they played that damn thing for half an hour, and I'll bet Bill Savitt was having apoplexy. Oh, Lord. And Ivor was the one who was playing it.
Rusty Potts.
Remember Big Brother Bill? He used to be on in the morning when I was a little kid. I used to listen to him. His real name was Ivor Hugh.
There was a children's program.
Again, Debbie Savitt first.
Leroy the Duck was the featured character.
To all the friendly forest animals that appear on the morning Kitty Corner program. First of all, we have Leroy the Duck. After Leroy, we have his very good friend, Sammy the Squirrel. As you see, he talks very quickly. After Sammy, in walks Beatrum the Bear.
Hello there, boys and girls. This is Beatrum the Bear speaking.
And I had a children's show called Big Brother Bill and My Little Duck Leroy.
Oh, yes, Leroy.
And that was on the air for many, many years.
Ivor did his children's show, Leroy the Duck.
Leroy the Duck was born many, many years ago with WCCC when I started back, I think, in 1948 or 49 when I came to this country from England. And I could talk like a duck. And a good friend of mine who lived in Harwinton was named Leroy. So that's how he got the name be called Leroy. And it was part of a program called the Cockney Cowboy. I was a Cockney.
Hello, how are you?
And I had another friend with me, and that's where Leroy came into the scene. That was way back, I would say, 1949.
Is that Professor Pumpernickel you were talking to a few minutes ago? Professor Pumpernickel, was he really a North Pole explorer?
Yes, he was very famous.
He was very famous. Just that very tough understanding you. Say it very loud. Don't say it, no. Please, don't touch the microphone.
Gave Bob Steele a little run for his money, because it was on the same time as he was, 8 o'clock. Bob Steele had a continuing children's story, and I had complete children's stories, and it would be on between 8 and 8:30, and in those days when radio was the only means of, you know, communication, we'd tell the boys and girls where their present was. The mothers and fathers would let us know, and we'd say, okay, Johnny, you'll find your birthday present under the radio or in the lower drawer of your daddy's dresser or something like that. That was fun.
We have another man in the audience here with us tonight, Dr. Zugoff. The psychologist. Dr. Zugoff, what do you think of us?
I think you are both suffering from psychosis.
That's what he said, psychosis.
You are psychosis. Suffering from inner sanctuary disturbances, Mr. Doc.
So we had a huge listening audience.
Bill Savitt organized big events around the Leroy the Duck character.
And he would have birthday parties for Leroy the Duck at the Bushnell Auditorium, and I do remember this as a child, and I remember that he would bring in big names like Rosemary Clooney, and he also had Frank Sinatra.
Rosemary Clooney became a good friend of ours because she broke a record in Hartford, Me and My Teddy Bear.
Me and my teddy bear have no worries, have no care. Me.
And she did it at one of our Leroy the Duck Camp Current big parties that we put on the Bushnell on Saturdays. Once a year we would do that, and everybody would come, and she came and broke the record. They got to know Leroy quite well.
He was also Flippy the Clown on Channel 8 in television, and he used to take the train down to New Haven to do his TV show and come back and finish up working at CCC. Which
I started when Channel 8 was Channel 6, way, way back, and I had Flippy the Clown on. I was Flippy the Clown for many, many years with my little duck, Leroy.
Really, really.
Yeah.
Bye-bye!
And Jack Brooks, Jack Breutman is his real name, was the news director.
Moved down to WCCC in 1951. Stayed there till 1960. It was a fascinating time to be on local radio, even though it's a 500-watt daytime AM station at the time. Later we got FM. But in the AM, I just joined the announcing staff. But within a period of probably 6 months, I was named news director. And then about 6 months later, I was also named program director. So maybe that'll be a clue as to what working at a radio station like that was all about.
We're talking now with Betty Hugh, publicity director of the American Red Cross in New Orleans, with the latest situation along the Louisiana coast as a result of Hurricane Audrey.
Thanks a lot, Jack. As you know, New Orleans itself hasn't been affected in this area, but there has been heavy damage along the West Louisiana coast around the Lake Charles area, around where the storm hit the mainland. It seems that the little town of Cameron has been the most heavily affected. At this moment, the Coast Guard is out looking for either survivors or victims of the storm. They've commandeered all boats in that area, and until they come in and make their report, there will be no actual knowledge of just how heavy the drowning loss was. We do know that there have been 48 deaths so far.
So it was an exciting period. It was an exciting time. I was the breakfast newsboy, reading the Hartford Current and playing music, news, weather, you know, the whole bit. I lived in East Hartford, came to work and had to open the radio station in Hartford, and I had to be in about 5:30 in the morning to get on the air at 6. One very, very snowy day, I could not get out of my driveway. I certainly couldn't drive down the street that I lived on in East Hartford. So I called the Hartford police and said, is there any way that you guys could get me in? I have to open a radio station. They said, well, no, we can't get down there, but we'll call the East Hartford police and see if they'll pick you up, and we can arrange to meet you on the Bulkley Bridge. So an East Hartford cruiser came to my home, 89 O'Connell Drive in East Hartford, picked me up, drove me to the end of the Buckley Bridge, and before it was Route 84, by the way, way before it was Route 84, it was just the Albany Avenue extension and Connecticut Boulevard. He left me off at Connecticut Boulevard. I trudged across the bridge into a Hartford cruiser, and Hartford cruiser took me to the Hotel Bond so I could open up the radio station.
Almost door-to-door service, I guess.
Almost door-to-door, but I felt like one of those spies who came in from the cold.
Yeah, it's like getting
off
Charlie.
Right, Checkpoint Charlie, getting off in one cruiser and getting into another cruiser to do that.
Well, radio was a big thing then, right? I mean,
well, it was so big, yes, it was very big. And to my credit or dismay, I'm not sure how many people ever heard Jack Brooks early in the morning on WCCC. I was opposite Bob Steele for all the 9 years that I was on the air. So I may be the only broadcaster who had the smallest possible audience in the periods that Bob Steele was also on the air. We didn't make much money. I went to work at WCCC in 1951 for $50. A week. I think I left there 9 years later making all of $75 a week. I went to WPOP for a raise.
Ivor Hugh.
And we had some people such as Joe Durand, who was one of the big radio personalities at that time. Bill Hennessy was with us.
A guy named Ralph Klein was the general manager, a sweetheart of a guy. He used to be at Mutual in New York and at some of the networks. He wrote scripts for the Lone Ranger and things of that nature, but he was the manager. Bert LeCoe was the program director. Bert is now gone, and Ralph Klein is now gone. Ev Seltzer was a salesman. He's also dead. He ended up at Channel 30.
As I worked at ECC for a couple of weekends.
Don Blair.
When they were in the Bond Hotel, and Bob Scott was over there with me, and Jerry Bishop from WDRC was there with us for a while.
Jerry Bishop.
WCCC was a very conservative daytime station, so daylight hours determined how many hours it was on the air, and they did everything from pop music to news to classical music, which happened at night. It was neither fish nor fowl at the time, and I think it probably wouldn't exist in today's format structure. But it was fun. I mean, it was a great training ground for me.
I mean, you know, we were like vagabonds.
Then WCCC in those early days.
Rusty Potts.
A well-known announcer, Frank Knight, was a tremendous announcer, and eventually Mike Connors did a great jazz show on WCCC.
The Al Jarvis Orchestra did regular broadcasts on WCCC. Sam Pasco.
Wasn't too long after we started the orchestra, and the manager of the station we had done business with, and he knew that I played music, and he suggested to us that we might want to give some thought to maybe playing some music on his station around lunchtime. Thank you. record the music. And so that's what we did with our five-member orchestra. And we started the orchestra, and we played music on WCCC. And the many early years of it, running the station, early years.
Again, Jack Breitman.
We were pretty well known. We had a pretty good rating for a daytime radio station, WCCC. For a while there, we were number one on the charts in the afternoons, mainly because of the music we were playing.
Again, Bill Hennessy.
And a very popular station in downtown Hartford because everybody else was network.
It was before POP became rock and DRC started to make inroads into that.
But it was mostly music.
Again, Ivor Hugh.
At a time when most stations had programs. You know, Robert E. Smith was on TIC, and everyone had a specific program. But I think, if I remember correctly, 1290 Hits was the idea of all the music of today without any particular segments in it. So it was something that Bill, I think, brought into play. It was probably going around the country at the same time, but I remember 1290 Hits was a big one at that time.
What type of music were you playing back then?
All the pop tunes of today. Bill Sabat liked middle-of-the-road music, and he liked, for example, Mantovani was one of his favorite composers, so we had to make sure that we would play that kind of music.
Volare, oh, cantare, oh.
It was all the pop music of the day. It was the only station around that did only pop music. And by pop music in those days, people like Joni James and Tony Bennett and the McGuire sisters and Bing Crosby was still a factor, Perry Como, Frank Sinatra.
Friday afternoons was commercial recording time. I would be given something like 30 different spots, and we would record them on Friday afternoon.
In our studio today is Bill Sabat. Bill, I hear you just made a sensational test of a POMG watch. Will you tell us about it?
I'll be delighted to. You know, I came back from Europe on a slow boat. I tied this great watch on the end of a rope, dragged it at the bottom of the sea for 9 days and 9 nights. And when I got into New York, at the pier, there were 100 jewelers who were waiting to give it the acid test.
Well, what did it look like?
What did the what look like?
The watch.
Oh, it was covered with seaweed. It was really rusty and really a sight for sore eyes.
Was it running?
Was it running? Are you kidding? It certainly was not.
Well, what does that prove?
It only proves one thing. Never take a good watch and drag it at the bottom of the sea for 9 days and 9 nights unless you've got a POMG 3-year free service guarantee.
Buy POMG watches at Sabat Jewelers, 35 Asylum Street, 35 seconds from Main in downtown Hartford. Look for the POMG sign over the door. Make sure you're at Sabat.
All he would do was commercials once in a while, yeah. And we had a wonderful staff at that point. We would do all the commercials on a Friday afternoon. I remember the big 12-inch blank wax discs that we would put on and make the cuts for the recordings.
Yeah, they were 15-inch discs. They were wax recordings. Bert Lecoe was our program manager in charge of the commercials and things like that. And he would run the recording machine, and we would record these one-minute spots, one right after the other. They would hand me 16 Manischewitz commercials, or maybe 15. Well, we could get 15 one-minute spots on a single side.
You know, we would have a brush, and I can remember still the smell of the wax as we would record the old commercials.
But if we made a goof, we'd have to stop the recording. He would take a yellow crayon and crayon that cut, and then we go on to the next. And then Bill Sabat, Wilbur Randall's agency, would write the Sabat commercials, and I would record all the Sabat commercials. And again, there would be a week's supply of those, and we would do them all on Friday afternoon.
What's 5D do except make my diamond safer?
Improves the beauty, value, size, and sentiment of your diamond.
Yeah? Well, how much does it cost?
5D costs from $24.75 to $250. Most 5Ds cost about $42.50.
I suppose I'll have to pay all at once.
Oh, no. You can take a full year to pay at Sabat.
What if I don't like the 5D?
Return it. Sabat will refund your money cheerfully and replace your diamond in its original setting, free of charge.
I bet you say that to everyone.
You're right. We say it to everyone who shops at Sabat Jewelers, 35 Asylum Street. Look for the POMG sign over the door.
I did already.
Barbara Davitt.
And I started doing commercials for WCCC in Hartford, and I was the 5D Diamond Girl and that type of thing.
Toward the end of the afternoon, there were more yellows on the discs than there were cuts, because we were getting tired, and we would begin to joke around. And after a while, when you've done the 12th or 13th Manischewitz wine commercial, they get to be pretty funny. And when you've done that many Savitt commercials, they get even funnier to you. No, to not anybody else. Certainly not to Bill Savitt, but they got funny to us.
This was a good time in radio.
Well, it was decided that AM being a radio station wasn't quite enough, and so Bill Savitt got himself a license for an FM station. And in those days, we were able to simulcast. So when the FM went on, it would be the same program, both AM and FM. But the interesting thing was, one morning, I was on the air, again, all by myself, and the door to the studio opens, and this big burly guy comes in and says, "I got an FM antenna out here. What do you want me to do with it?" And that was news to me that there was going to be an FM antenna. I said, "Well," and I looked around, and we're in the basement of the Hotel Bond. The only two other things in that basement were the men's room and the barber shop. Okay. I said, "Well, I don't know. You can bring it down here." He says, "It's a little bit too big." I said, "How big is it?" He says, "Well, it's about 70 feet long." "What do you mean?" "It's on a truck outside." I said, "Wait, let me get on the telephone. Yeah. I'll have to find somebody." Yeah, it was the FM antenna that's now on Avon Mountain. He wanted to know where to put it. So we went FM simulcast. Then the word came down from the FCC that we had to have separate programming. We did do separate programming.
And you had an FM. I remember WCCC-FM. At that point, when I was working for him still, I was the program director of WCCC-FM when WQXR used, we wanted the key stations for the QXR network.
That was the New York Times
station,
right?
New York Times station, Classics.
Right.
Yeah, and it would come to Hartford, and then we'd divert the signal all over the place.
I really wanted to work at a Hartford station because I came from Hartford.
Rusty Potts.
And so I went in and I talked to Bill Savitt, who was very, very nice to me. And I said, "You know, gee, Mr. Savitt," I said, "it's too bad. I don't think you have an awful lot of listeners. I'd really like to work at your radio station and see if I could help to build it up." I was very cocky at the time. I haven't changed much over the years either, but very cocky in those days. And he said, "No listeners." He takes a suitcase, he opens it up and empties it out on his desk with all these envelopes from people who had entered a contest. He said, "Who says we don't have any listeners?" I was very impressed with that. But anyway, I guess he liked my ambition and my spunk, and he gave me a job. He hired me as a full-time utility man. He actually created a position for me, and I really appreciated that.
So utility man is sort of the substitution person on the weekends and things?
Yeah, that's right. Guy fills in on vacations. He fills in if somebody's out sick. He does weekends and does news, production, anything that's needed.
He sold the station in 1967.
Bill Savitt's daughter, Debbie Savitt First.
At that time, I was in college, and I remember kind of being sad after learning about it, because at the end of the day, you know, I'm in communications, and so is my sister in Atlanta, Georgia. And I think had we not been girls at the time and not destined at that time to be entrepreneurs as he was, which we ended up being, you know, maybe he would have held on to it.
Again, Rusty Potts.
I was hired by a fellow by the name of Morgan St. Germain. His real name was Dennis Rast.
Now, Morgan in the afternoon from WCCC, 4:30. After 3 o'clock on a Monday, kind of cold downtown, I'll tell you the forecast. After Perry Como brightens it up, makes it almost like spring. Sunshine Wine is his song. That must be May Wine. And can mosquitoes be far behind? Think about that.
WCCC Radio Hartford.
And it was a middle-of-the-road station when I went to work there, and it was a very good atmosphere. And then it was owned by Elektra Records at that time.
This is WCCC and WCCC-FM, the Elektra Broadcasting Stations in Hartford, Connecticut.
Elektra Records sold it to Cy Dressner, who was from upstate New York, and Cy had several little stations along the years, but he had put them all on the air. CCC was the first one they ever bought. I think the amount of money he paid when he bought that station, which was the AM, which was in Elmwood, with a lot of property, and the FM, 50,000 watts, tremendous signal, I think he only paid $350,000 for the radio station. And I became music director shortly after he bought it, and then eventually I got promoted to program director, and of course I always wanted to rock, you know, so we talked a minute going all request radio.
Triple C Hartford, good morning everybody. It'll be partly sunny and cold today. High 15 right now, 8 degrees below zero at 8:57. Ladies ladies and gentlemen, the most requested hits of all time.
WCCC, AM and FM in Hartford.
It's 9 o'clock in the Insurance City. This is Rusty Parks with Maximum Music.
And it was the first station, I think, to ever do that. Everything we played 24 hours a day was a request. Almost every request that we played, we played back the person's voice asking for that song. We'd play it back on the air.
Hey, that's Chicago at All Request Radio at the Rusty Pot Show at the All Request Firehouse. Everybody, it's Saturday in the park. Good morning there. 24 and a half minutes after 8 o'clock, Triple C Most Music Time. Sunny and nice today, high in the middle 70s. Right now it's 60 degrees in Hartford.
All Request Radio, Triple C.
You're on the air at CCC.
Hey, what you doing?
Hey, how are you?
Pretty good.
Who's this?
Chris Tichini.
Where are you from, Chris?
South Glastonbury.
What would you like to hear?
Can I hear Duncan?
Okay, thanks for...
I custom-built a cartridge machine that every time you played something, it would automatically erase itself, so you didn't have to keep taking the cartridge out of the machine to record the person. But we also had it set up so you could find any song within 30 seconds. I set up a system where everything was coded, and it was very easy to find any record. We had records in those days. We didn't use musical cartridges or CDs, or there were no computers. So everything was on record. There were mostly 45s and some albums as well, but that was very, very elaborate.
So I, out of desperation, took a job in Hartford at WCCC-FM.
Ken DeVoe.
Now, again, back then, it wasn't what you know as CCC today. They were back then doing, if you can believe it, all request radio. They had us go in and literally take phone calls for every record we had to play. We had to get a phone call, find a record, and put it on the air. And it was exhausting, and it was horrible and all that, and I only lasted a few months there.
We had, at one time, I guess we knocked out the telephone system in Hartford, and the telephone company complained. They came in as a test, and they put in 18 lines and 18 answering machines and still couldn't handle it, so they switched it to 36 lines and 36 answering machines, and they determined that's what we needed because they metered the calls. We were getting 88,000 busy signals a day, and it was really messing up a lot of important services in Hartford.
Wow.
And but Cy would not spend the money for the answering machines and the telephone, so he wound up going to all requests strictly through the mail.
Triple C FM Stereo is the place where we take your requests in the mail, of course. I mean, Miss B. Moses and I do the same thing. Send me something, will you? From the Triple C Top 30 Survey. And send it along with your name, your town, the time and day you want to hear it. Give me a few days and Amos will whip it on y'all.
She was black.
That didn't work, and we just went straight top 40 after that. And I think I left a little while after that. But the funniest moment, I think, was when at CCC, we set it up so we had a situation where Boston Bill allegedly locked himself in the studio at Triple C.
Says, I should have got that full-time job a long time ago, but look at me. A mere shell of a man sitting here before this AM-FM stereo board wondering what will become of this poor hulk that sits in his chair and wonders what will become of this poor hulk. I could go on with that for hours, but seriously, kids, before you run away in laughter, remember, I'm only doing this because I need the money, and I think that I've been used. And with that, why don't we go on to our next musical selection?
WCCC!
Which, strangely enough, I have picked from our exclusive WCC file of exclusive number one picks. And this is a song I predict will go to number one in Hartford within the next 20 minutes. Melanie. Flash, kids, flash!
And he wasn't going to leave the studio, and he was going to stay on the air around the clock. And we played the song Bitter Bad by Melody around the clock for 36 straight hours.
Okay, now if any time during the night you decide that you can't take anymore and you want to give up altogether, you call me up.
Potts.
And if I have to send an ambulance down to the station to take you out of here on a stretcher, I will, and I'll come in happily and I'll take over for you.
You're getting dramatic, buddy. I am going to be here until I am happy, and when I am happy and you have made your announcement to the entire city of Hartford and I have witnesses that say that you are going to give me what I want, that's when I will leave.
You know, he was allegedly refusing to stop doing that, and so, of course, I capitulated, and it was great publicity for everybody was listening at the time. And we had a pretty good lineup of disc jockeys there, too. And Dan Walker.
Delta John and a Crocodile Rock, baby. Andy Walker Show on a Sunday at CCC. Christmas Eve, 1972. Variable cloudiness this afternoon, high in the 40s. Cloudy tonight and Monday. Chance of mixed rain and snow on Monday. Don't take off our New York company. I'll have to sleep over, gang. We have, how many degrees? 34. I said up 1 degree. 34 degrees. News is next. We'll be back on the other side taking your requests.
All requests, Triple C, playing what you're saying.
saying what you say.
And to get your request on the air, all you do is listen for your town to be mentioned on the air or your county, and then you call us at the given number. And this way, you'll get on the air instantaneously on CCC All Request Music Radio, Connecticut's first and only.
Bill James, fellow by the name of Big John, guy by the name of Dale Donovan, and then eventually, I know we had Tracy came in, Edward M. on the weekends. Eventually, we brought in Dick Booth, and then Boston Bill.
Hi, who's this?
This is Andy Keegan.
And you've never been on the radio before, huh, Andy?
No.
Okay, where do you come from?
West Hartford.
All righty. Nice talking to you, Andy.
Yeah.
Who's this?
Lauren Woodhouse.
Have you ever been on the air before?
No.
Welcome to the show. Where do you come from?
Manchester, Connecticut.
Welcome.
It was a very exciting radio station, and I know that we did bite in the ratings. We went from number 11 to number 5 in the ratings in just one book with no promotion of any kind, because Cy would never spend any money. He's known for that. And so we went from number 11 to number 5 in one book, and we stayed that way. Didn't get any higher than that, but we did hit number 1 in teens in the ratings. We took it away from POP.
Radio historian Ed Bruder.
WCCC, the announcer is Brooklyn Joe, who was also known as Dick Booth and was known as Sebastian on several Hartford area stations.
New discovery from Hartford's Triple C.
304 with Brooklyn Joe at 549-1122. I'll take callers from Hartford, Plainville, and Suffield.
24 hours, all requests, Triple C.
CCC, you're on the air.
This is John Peterson from Hartford, Paris Superstation.
Sebastian is perhaps best known for reporting on air that Avon Mountain was an active volcano and was erupting. Shock jock Howard Stern got his first major market gig at WCCC.
WCCC FM 107 and your smiling face from James Taylor, JT. Every Wednesday, the Hard Rock Cafe features an all-night happy hour and brings in A&M recording stars, the Dirty Angels. The Dirty Angels are a forceful young rock combo, formerly the West Hartford Music Hall, but you knew that.
WCCC eventually was one of Hartford's premier album rock stations. Under Marlin Broadcasting, WCCC AM became Beethoven Radio, and for a time held the call letters WTMI, which had belonged to a Miami radio station belonging to the same owner. In 2014, WCCC AM and FM were sold and dropped all local programming in favor of the syndicated K-Love Christian rock format. Though he sold WCCC AM and FM and got out of the radio business in 1967, Savitz commercials continued to play on Hartford radio and TV until his store closed in 1986. Though he passed away in 1995, many people still remember Bill Savitz.
It's such a beautiful sight when you look to the right, going south on the Charterhole Bridge. There's a traveler's tower and a whole lot more, like the Constitution Plaza and Bill Savitz Jewelry Store. For weddings and birthdays and anniversaries, Bill Savitz will have it, the perfect gift for these. You'll find there's quality service.
You've been listening to Bill Savitz and his Barbershop Gems.
See, once upon a time,
Bill Glynn,
we had two newspapers in town, the Hartford Courant and the Hartford Times.
At the time, the Hartford Times was the king of the newspaper in this area.
Dan Bloom.
The Courant basically was an also-ran newspaper.
And the Hartford Times had their own radio station, WTHT, which stood for the Hartford Times.
This is the voice of Hartford, WTHT.
The Times ran THT, and it was really the old local broadcast. I don't know if it was the Mutual Network or the Yankee Network, but it was pretty basic.
WTHT went on the air August 12, 1936.
Radio historian Bob Payne.
From studios in the old American Industrial Building at 983 Main Street, and that was across from the old G. Fox building. They were on the top floor. It was a daytime station on 1200. They were 100 watts until around 1938, and they went to a nighttime operation in about 1937. Around 1941, they went to 250 watts full-time. On March 29th, 1941, they moved to 1230.
I was fresh out of high school and looking for a job in 1936.
Former WTHT engineer and salesman, Al Cohen.
And I read in the paper that there's a radio station being built, and having been a radio ham for many years, I figured perhaps I could qualify, so I went down and applied, and I spoke with Dick Blackburn, who was the chief engineer, and he said, well, we can't hire you unless you have a radio telephone first FCC license. So I went home and studied hard for a month, and then went down to New York and took the exam at the customs house in New York, and wrote papers for 3 days. They had a long examination then. It wasn't a question and answer like today. The more you wrote, the better they liked it, because the more chance you had of tripping up. And eventually, it seemed like years, the license came in the mail. I grabbed it in my hot little fist and ran downtown and said, here, I got a license. Can I have a job? And they said, no, we're up for them, but we'll call you if we need you. And they did call me that summer, and I was a night relief man during vacations. I had been working across the street at G. Fox in the radio repair department, so it was a pretty convenient for me. I got through at G. Fox at 10 minutes of 6 and walked across the street to 983 Main Street and went to work at the radio station. When I got my first paycheck, I felt guilty receiving it, because here I was having fun. I'm getting paid for it.
It's 8 o'clock, and here's the latest news from the WTHT Hartford Times newsroom, brought to you by Horse Falls. Now here's the news.
We had a fair amount of involvement with the Hartford Times.
Again, Al Cohen.
Francis Murphy, who was the publisher, we'd see him. He might have participated in some of the programs. And also each year we did the pickup and broadcast the Hartford Times Carol Sing. And remember when Harry Truman came to town, we did a pickup from the area below the portico. He came by in his vehicle, a limo probably. Art McGinley, who was the sports writer's idol, if you might say, did sports. Cyrano Gamble eventually came to work at WTHD, but he had been a political writer at the Times. Cyrano Gamble, of course, had a political commentary. Way back, there were some scandals in Waterbury, and those were covered by Cedric Foster, who used to be a Hartford Times staffer and was manager at that time of WTHD. And I remember he used to report from Waterbury, and he had the same intro each night, and I got so that I could paraphrase the words as he came on the monitor loudspeakers. We're speaking to you from Waterbury, where T. Frank Hayes and 32 others were indicted for, etc., etc. I don't remember it now, but boy, that was just a routine, yeah. Routine announcement.
Some things about Waterbury haven't changed too much, I guess.
Yeah, true to its past.
THT was 1230.
Bill Hennessy.
And their signal strength was the big problem. They couldn't get out to get as many people as DRC and TIC did.
That was a pretty limited thing at first. Our antenna tower was on top of the American Industrial Building at 983 Main Street. That was a 16-story building that didn't have a 13th floor. I guess most buildings, I don't know whether that's true today, but at one time nobody had a 13th floor. It went 12th to the 14th, and we were on the 16th, and we had a 100-watt transmitter. It was a good, strong signal in downtown Hartford, and a 100-watt, if you went out very far into Wethersfield at night, there'd be holes in that signal where some other station would come in. But in those days, you didn't have that big a population in the suburbs, and a lot of your population was concentrated in downtown Hartford, and that was what the advertisers actually wanted. Your local advertisers wanted that. Your national advertisers probably would have liked the greater coverage, but the rates were adjusted accordingly. And
Joan Cowie.
And the station moved from the building that used to be across from G. Fox and Company to the one on the Asylum Hill by the railroad station.
Bill Glynn.
They were located down on Asylum Street, right by the railroad station there.
Well, I got out of the service in 1946, and it had just moved to 555 Asylum Street. And whereas at 983 we had a trussle work, if you will, type of tower that was self-supporting at 983 Main, and we went to 555 Asylum Street, we had a big stick, and it was guide. It wasn't a self-supporting structure.
Did the signal get out any better from the new
location?
I think that, well, we had a little more power. We had 250 watts there. We didn't have the altitude that we had, but we had a better ground. And it was better, but it wasn't earth-shaking. It didn't cover a lot of territory. Nothing like the 50,000-watt stations.
WTHT also had an FM station from 1948 until the early 1950s.
The FM station was up at the Hubline, Hubline Tower. We pronounce it, people today call it Hubline, but the transmitter was in the basement of that building, and the antenna was on top of the tower, up on top of Avon Mountain. And at one time, I had the night shift at the FM station. I used to get there about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I think we'd sign off about midnight, and all we did was carry whatever programs came through, and at about midnight, we'd put on the recording. We referred to them as ETs, which was short for electrical transcription. We'd put that on. Nice, scratchy record. It got scratchier. After a while, we have to keep making new ones every few months, and that would sign the station off. Mm-hmm. And that was strictly. And in those days, the FCC required an engineer, I say engineer in quotes, on duty at all transmitting locations. Nowadays, it's one engineer is responsible for a half a dozen or more stations.
When I was in the Army,
former WTHT announcer Charlie Norwood,
Glover Delaney, his brother was in my outfit. He referred me. He thought that perhaps they might have something for me at this station in Hartford. So I came to Hartford and took an audition at WTHT and passed it. And I was there for about 2.5 years, 1946 and 7, and there in 8. We were a small station. We did a pretty good local job, I think, with the people we had.
Al Cohen.
Well, I remember Bob Martineau. I remember Joe Durand.
Rusty Potts.
Very well-known personality in those days was Joe Durand.
Joe Durand did afternoon drive at THT.
Bill Davies.
I've read from some of his biographies, started out as a page at Radio City, as many of the announcers did at that time. He was in a number of stations around the Hartford area.
He was a disc jockey.
Norm Hausman.
And what I liked most about him was he ran a quiz show, and it was called What You Know with Joe. And it was a deal where he would raise a question, and then he would, theoretically, at least at random, pick a telephone number, call that number, and the person would answer, and he'd ask the question. The person won the, they'd get a gift certificate, the lane furniture, or some damn thing.
Jiminy Crickets by the old Ray McKinley Band. It was the afternoon theme for Joe Durand on WTHT.
Hello there, this is Joe Durand. Say, have you seen Ebenezer Scrooge? He's in town again. You, your children, and friends are invited to go and see him in the lobby of the State Savings Bank. As their contribution to the spirit of Christmas in downtown Hartford, State Savings have on display a three-dimensional diorama showing Scrooge leaning out of his window on Christmas morning. He's calling to a little boy to run to the market to buy the prize turkey for Bob Cratchit's Christmas dinner. State Savings, the most convenient spot in town for savers, 39 Pearl Street in Hartford.
After THT went off the air, I understand Joe Durand, and he was at CCC for a while. I know I heard him at WELI. He was at WINF over in Manchester, ELI, of course, being in New Haven. And I had read that he had had some heart trouble and I believe died at the age of 49.
Eunice King.
Yeah, I was trying to remember the exact date when she started with WTHT.
Eunice King's daughter, Joan Cowie.
But I think it was around the beginning of the war, must have been 1941, or even late 40s. And then when my father died, she started working full-time.
Eunice Greenwood, I know there are others that don't come to mind immediately. I haven't thought about them in probably 50 years.
Bill Hennessy.
Mitch Betters is one of the announcers, had a big, deep, booming voice. I think Floyd and Betty Patti did a husband and wife show on WTHT.
Again, Al Cohen.
Well, we were on Mutual through the Yankee Network in Boston, but there was a lot of local programming in those days. There was, for instance, Hartford Speaks.
In the beautiful sunshine in downtown Hartford, we bring you Hartford Speaks, transcribed. I'm Bob Maher. Here's Eunice King.
Well, you bright little spring boy, you're anticipating it a little bit, aren't you?
Eunice King's daughter, Joan Cowie.
Hartford Speaks was a program that interviewed people walking by on the street. I think it was one of the first ones that did that. And she would, or Joe would, approach somebody.
We have a question that we're asking our guests on this program. If Henry Wallace, if, no, I get this wrong every time. If it were election day tomorrow, would you vote for Henry Wallace?
Well, I don't know. I haven't, you know, hadn't thought it over much. I don't know much about him.
You'd want to have a little more time
to
think it over.
Yes, I don't believe in voting right off and without knowing.
No, it's a pretty serious thing. You want to take a lot of time to think it over. Thank you for your opinions. And now tickets to Lowest Poll Eye, where Gentleman's Agreement with Gregory Peck and Dorothy McGuire is playing. A very, very fine picture, I believe it is. Thank you very much. You take these admissions. And thanks to being
both of you.
Just one? Don't you want to take your good husband with me?
Oh, yes. Well,
you take your husband with you.
I didn't know what one was for
this. And some people are nervous and they don't want to do it, so they just walk by, but others were very, you know, willing to do it. And it became very popular, and it was a 15-minute program, I think from 12:45 to 1:00 on people's lunch hour, and it just kind of clicked.
Hartford Speaks, that was done on State Street in front of Whalen Jewelry Store, and she did that show.
There you are. Now, this is a rebroadcast at 1:30, so you've time to run home and get to a radio. WTHT.
I don't know if I can find it out.
You can find it. It's 12:30 on the dial.
12:30. Mm-hmm. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much.
Well,
thank you. Tell me, do they have these type of programs down in Nashville?
Yes, we have the Man on the Street, but I've never been on it. This is my first time on any of them.
All right. Do you favor Wallace's starting a third party?
No, I don't, because I think he's put it bluntly, he's a communist. And he just seems to follow Joe Stalin's ideas. He's not for anything that like the Marshall Plan. He's very definitely against that.
Who would you vote for if you had the chance to today?
Well, between whom?
Well, there's so many candidates. Let's see, Stassen, Taft, Truman. Let's take those three.
Vote for General Eisenhower if he ran.
If he ran, what do you think of Eisenhower getting out of the race?
Well, he's right in the way because he's still connected with the Army and he hasn't any, say against it because President Truman is still his advisor, I guess, commander-in-chief.
Fred Swanson.
Ben Hawthorne was the early morning man in WTIC going back to the 30s.
And so we come to the close of another evening in the Old Town Opera House on the Square, bringing you WTHT's transcribed popular concert, Curtain Call USA. Every night from 10:15 to 11 o'clock, we invite you to join with the happy throng of music lovers who take their seats in the ornate old edifice here on the town square. So now, until tomorrow evening at 10:15, this is Ben Hawthorne expressing the hope that I'll have the privilege and pleasure of counting you and your family among my listeners tomorrow morning on my Ben Hawthorne breakfast program from 7 to 9 o'clock. And concluding tonight's offerings with the wish for a very happy good night.
Ben went to work for WTHT.
What happened there was Ben Hawthorne went away into the service. He had joined a mountaineering group, a ski patrol type of thing. And when he came back, Bob Steele was pretty firmly entrenched in TIC, so he came over and worked with us.
The time now. Come on, Bess, old thing. By the country cowbell, it is 20 minutes and 27 seconds before 8 o'clock in the morning. And here's a little poem right smack in the middle of things. Goes this away. Oh, for the juice of the prune at noon. Oh, for the juice in the morn. But the taste of the juice of the prune so soon will make you feel glad you were born. Of course, it goes without saying that that's silver birch dry prune juice in the big quart bottle at your grocer's.
I had the pleasure of working with Ben Hawthorne for quite a long time. I don't know how many years, but he was a nice guy to work with. Incidentally, he was the brother of Una King. There were the churches on Sunday morning. We had a different church each week. There were Sunday mornings we would have a lot of ethnic programs. We'd have an Italian program and a Polish program, and Max Tager ran the Jewish program. It was just a nice bunch of people to work with.
Bye.
We had a kids show where the young kids in a dramatic group came and they put on dramatized fairy tales.
Hey, kids, this is Brother Rabbit, and listen to this.
I remember there was one kids program that I'm trying to think of the announcer's name, but he had a character in it called Chester the Camel. And Chester the Camel had different episodes each time, and I know he had a pretty good audience because the switchboard would light up with questions and comments and so forth.
Again, Al Cohen.
And of course, I felt that working there, I got a liberal arts education. I came fresh out of high school, or perhaps maybe a year out of high school by the time I went to work there. You dealt with people whose diction was good. In fact, some of the words that I'd heard in third grade and so on that used to end in I-N apostrophe, I learned it now ended in I-N-G. I remember an announcer walking into the news booth to read the newscast, and he'd had a script there, and who took my blank ing script? I never knew in all my life that that word had a G on the end of it. And I thought, now I am really living here in culture. And, of course, you're dealing with a fairly erudite level of people in there. It was nice to be among them and absorb some of the culture that took place. Like, for instance, in the mornings at 9 o'clock, we had the concert hour. I didn't know very much, if anything, about classical music, but I acquired a liberal arts education and music appreciation and political interests and a million and one things. And I got an insight into political events because in those days, we did a lot of local work. We did a lot of live stuff. But in one particular occasion, I was at Governor's Mansion. Oh, I just can't recall the governor's name. It'll come back to me. And we had a little bit before airtime. We were putting him on Coast to Coast at Mutual, and he was a pleasant fellow making conversation. He said to me, now, what do you hear? What do the people say? And I thought, boy, this is big time. Here is the governor of Connecticut asking me what I think. I thought that was real big. We did pickups from the Bushnell. When the big bands came to Hartford and the State Theater, it was my job every Friday night when the bands were in town to go down the State Theater, set up the microphones, and feed the pickup to the studios, and which in turn fed it to the Coast to Coast network of the Mutual Broadcasting System. So here we were big time out of Hartford, Connecticut, feeding Coast to Coast Mutual. Of course, we did all the big bands. We did Benny Goodman, Kay Kaiser, Shep Fields, Lawrence Welk, Tommy Dorsey, Jimmy Dorsey. Over a period of time, I guess every major big band played the State Theater in Hartford, and it was my job to do the pickup over there, and that was a lot of fun. I remember one incident when Sammy Kaye was playing, and I was visiting with a friend of mine that afternoon who was also a radio ham, and I said, hey, how would you like to come down and see the show backstage? And he said, yeah, I'd love it. And I said, okay, you're going to work. You're going to help me carry remote cases and microphones and cables and so forth. So we did the show, we put it on the air, and after the show was over, we're going out the stage door, and clustered around the stage door were loads of high school girls, Bobby Soxers, waiting to catch a glimpse of Sammy Kaye. And I came out of the stage door with a heavy suitcase in each hand, and right behind me was my friend. And as I came out the door, I turned around and said to him, okay, Sammy, right this way. And all the little girls hugged him and kissed him, and he had the time of his life. That was an interesting thing at the State Theater.
I think it was THT.
Dan Bloom.
They had the telegraphic recreation of the game. In other words, an announcer would sit in a room in front of a teletype machine, and you'd hear tick, 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 and he would read what that says, and then he would recreate the game. And if you've seen what the teletype produced, it was very simple shorthand. One base hit, left field, you know, out 5-3, shortstop or third baseman to first base. But these guys, especially Tom Hussey, was the announcer. He had an unbelievable, colorful way of making up these details, which of course were non-existent. But he was most famous for calling the strikeout. It would come in and he'd go, strike three. And that became his trademark. But, you know, it just shows you the way things have gone.
THT.
Former WTHT staffer. Bill Glynn.
They were doing the Eastern League games at that particular time. This was in the late 40s and early 50s. And I got the job as being the statistician and hoping all along I would get a chance to do some play-by-play, which the program director told me. Well, all the time I spent being the stats man, they never gave me a shot to do the play-by-play, which was a little disappointing.
Broadcasting as a community service of the University of Hartford, this is WWUH West Hartford, WAPJ Torrington, WDJW Summers, and WWEB Wallingford. And now back to Connecticut Radio Memories.
H. Bob Harrington.
Bill Davies.
Did a jazz program on Monday nights at 8:30 on WTHT called Journeys in Jazz. His theme was the Tin Roof Blues by the old Eddie Condon mob.
While no archival audio of Bob Harrington's WPHT program still exists, we do have his appearance on WWUH Radio with Doug Mayer.
All right, my guest this morning here on Morning Jazz is Bob Harrington, who referred to himself as the Stone Age Jazz Authority. Well, most of us here have to rely on books and records, to learn about the early musicians in jazz, but you've met quite a few of them and heard them.
I've been there, as I say. I've been there. Yes, Doug. I go back to the late 30s when I used to walk up and down 52nd Street and hear all the greats that we talk about today, like Charlie Parker and Art Tatum, and all the greats that were on the street at that time. And I knew them well, and I had a lot of fun listening to their music, and I, to this very day, enjoy them. When you asked me to come up here and be a guest in the program, I didn't quite know how to begin it. Then I thought, because I'm so very old in comparison to the listeners today, that maybe a little bit about the beginning of jazz itself. We don't really know. There's no factual thing. We have an idea that jazz came out of early blues and early banjo ragtime about 1875, 1880, and it sort of came into flower by the 1890s, and probably New Orleans was the best place of all, although it was happening in California and Texas and so on. But most of it happened in New Orleans, and most of the good music, the early music, was blues. And I thought, what better way to start the program than to play some blues? And here's one by John Bubbles.
Did you ever wake up with the blues all around your head?
There was also another jazz program on WTHT during the early 1950s.
That's the set of letters right there. Those I read, those W whatever it was there, boy. And I know because I listened to the radio and I heard on WTHT they have a program of real jazzy music, boy. And it runs right up till midnight. Real late. Good evening. Well, let's play some of it running up till midnight, shall we? We have all kinds of sponsors. You name them, we got them. And I can't say we can get them because we had trouble getting these. The Malvern people who supply us with Mercury Records and supply the record stores around town, including the record shop where you can buy most of the stuff we play and much of the stuff we don't play. Charlie's Restaurant, pizzas on order up till 1 o'clock in the morning. Arthur Drug, Charlie on order all hours of the night. And Warwick, where credit is quick and fashions click. In fact, sometime when you want to test your hearing aid, you just go by Warwick's and you'll hear them clicking away at you. Let's start it with a Count Basie side of Jumpin' at the Woodside. ¶¶
eventually I went into sales.
Al Cohen.
I got called into Glover Delaney's office one day. Glover Delaney was manager at that time, and we were in a situation where we needed somebody in sales, and he said, we're really overstaffed in some of the other departments. We'd like for you to go into sales and handle sales. And I said, well, gee, I've never done anything, any selling. He said, well, we think you can do it. So I thought about it for a minute. I said, well, suppose I go out there and I stub my toe and don't make it. Can I have my own job back? And he said, yes. I said, well, what have I got to lose? So this is great. I went out on the street and I was, wow, what do I do here? You know, it was tough. It was tough in the beginning. But eventually I got acclimated and had a feel for what I was doing. And one of the things that happened along on sales, my boss, who was Len Schoenfeld, gave me a list of people to call on. And he said, here's a real good one, Arthur Drugstores. They'd be a good account for you to get. They pay well, and they're nice people to deal with. So I went out and called on the CEO, Arthur Yadkin, and it was hard to get to. You're too busy. Anyway, after I don't know how long a period, I went back to Len Schoenfeld. I said, hey, Len, I'm wasting my time. I said, do you mind if I just drop this potential client? And he says, Al, stop and think for a minute. You know how difficult it is to get in to see him? Just imagine if you landed the account, how difficult it would be for somebody to take it away from you. I said, well, you know, that makes a lot of sense. So I kept after him. I finally got to see him one day. He's a very nice guy. And he said, you know, I really don't need anything additional. I'm on all the other stations and we're doing well. But if you came in with something that I liked, we'd consider it. And so I went back to studio that day. We had a trio there that did singing commercials for us. They were people out of Manchester, and I don't remember their names. They were two ladies and a gentleman, and they were fine people. And they were, I don't know, I'm not sure if they were on staff or an as-needed basis. Okay. And I said, look, I want you to go in the studio. And this was before tape recorders. We had a wire recorder. And I want you to go in the studio, and I'm going to record this. I want you to sing, Arthur, 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 open all the time, always open, never closed, always open, never closed, always open, never closed, and just keep singing till that studio light goes out. So I went back to him, and he listened to it, and he said, I like it. How much will it cost me? I said, it won't cost you anything. And he said, well, what do you mean by that? I said, I want your business. You give me business, that's yours to use.
Arthur, 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 open all the time. Arthur, 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 open all the time. Always open, never close.
And of course, had I had any foresight, I would have said, well, this will be yours for a nickel of performance or something like that. Because years later, I ran into him, I think at a Howard Johnson's, we were having coffee together. I said, you know, Mr. Yadkin, I really should have said to you, you can't have it free, you'll have it a nickel of performance. I'd have been rolling in nickels. So we both laughed about it, but it was water over the dam.
And now here's the weather.
Good morning. This is Hal Harshbarger at Brainerd Field, bringing you the morning weather report. Here is the forecast for Hartford, Springfield, and vicinity. Sunny and continued warm with low humidity and northwest winds 18 to 25 miles per hour today. A highest temperature near 80 degrees. Fair and cooler tonight. The lowest temperature near 48 degrees. Wednesday, sunny and cooler.
You've just heard the official weather forecast from the United States Weather Bureau at Brainerd Field.
WTHT had applied for a television license, and we had applied to use Channel 18, and we had no opposition on it, and it looked like it was a pretty done deal. Immediately before the FCC was going to act on it, General Teleradio applied for the same channel, which tied it up, and then they came to us and talking about a merger or whether we should buy them or they should buy us, or I think the deal was that if we sold out to them, they would withdraw their application. Something on that's a little hazy in my mind. And there was a meeting probably in New York where we were owned by the Gannett, Hartford Times was owned by the Gannett newspaper chain, and WONS was owned by General Teleradio out of Ohio. And there was a negotiation meeting in New York, and the Gannett financial guy was a chap by the name of Cruikshank. And General Teleradio, this is the way I heard the story.
Okay.
General Teleradio made an offer to WTHT or to the Gannett Group that this is a great deal and this is what we'll do and so on and so forth. You buy us out. And Cruikshank said, do you think that's a pretty good deal? And they said, well, that's an excellent deal. Well, if it's that good, why don't you take it? And they turned the tables right on them. In return, the Times got a certain amount of cash dollars and a half interest in Channel 18. So the Hartford Times ended up owning a piece of Channel 18. And then WTHT went off the air. WTHT went off the air was February 1954. The accounts that wanted to stay there went over to WONS, and the plantation workers went over along with the sale of the plantation to WONS. The ones who wanted us, I happened to be one of the wanted guys, and so I went over there with them, and I wasn't happy with the environment, and so after a few months, I left.
Where was WONS?
WONS was at 57 Pratt Street on the second floor, and the call letters were later changed to WGTH, which stood for General Teleradio, merged with The Hartford. The letters got merged in there somehow. Yeah. That was WGTH.
22 years after the demise of WTHT, its former owner, The Hartford Times, folded. Dan Bloom.
Nobody ever thought that anybody would care about the suburbs. The Current had the foresight of saying, you know, if we set up these little bureaus in these towns all over, then the Current will become well-circulated. And that caused the demise of the Hartford Times because it was a city newspaper and the Current was there in the suburbs.
While the Hartford Times building is set to be incorporated into the new Front Street development, WTHT Radio's original home is long gone.
Still 983 there? Main Street was imploded many years later to make room for the Stilts building, which is there now.
In 1935, WNBC went on the air, but we're not talking about 660 AM in New York City. Long before that WNBC, there was WNBC New Britain, Connecticut, occupying 1410 on the AM dial. Radio historian Bob Payne.
Their original call sign may or may not have been WMFE, but they, when they went on the air, which I believe was July 15th, 1935, they went on the air, and then the very next day, as the story goes, they were given WNBC for New Britain, Connecticut. They started in New Britain and operated a remote studio from Hartford.
Eventually, WNBC moved its studios from New Britain to downtown Hartford.
And then in 1942 or 43, moved to Hartford.
I applied to numerous radio stations in Hartford because that's where my home was.
Lonnie Jurev.
And eventually landed a job as a receptionist at WNBC on Pratt Street. I think it was 43. It was during the war. WNBC carried both the Red Network and the Blue Network. I can't remember which was which, I mean, which time of day. Dick Davis was the station manager. Larry Edwardson was the music director. And Berkey Berkowitz from New Britain was the sports announcer. Dick Bronson was the chief announcer. And I remember one of the engineers, Carl Perkins, and there was another one. People didn't make a lot of money in radio in those days, and the engineers had to moonlight. It was a place called Crystal Research Lab. I don't know exactly what it did, or I don't remember. And probably they didn't talk much about it then because it was the war and everything was hush-hush. And when Jan Miner, whom you may be acquainted with, had a woman's program from 8 to 9, when she went to WTIC, she turned her program over to me. She was very good to me.
What kind of topics did you cover on the women's program?
Oh, there'd be a little popular music breaking it up, and it was just mostly chit-chat, maybe some recipes. It was all so slight, it didn't make an impression on me.
In November 1944, the call letters were changed to WHTD for Hartford. The call letters changed again in 1946 to WONS. Bill Hennessy.
ONS was a Yankee Network and Mutual station. It was located on Pratt Street. You had to walk up a big flight of stairs, as I recall.
Doug Mitchell speaking. This is the world's largest network, the Mutual Broadcasting System. This is Hartford, 1410 WONS.
WONS, 1410 on the dial.
Jack Borden.
It was on 54 Pratt Street, second floor of the building. If I remember correctly, at that time, it was
owned by the General Tire and Rubber Company. General Teleradio, it was the O'Neill family.
John Ellinger.
It was owned by the O'Neills out of Boston.
Again, Jack Borden.
They also owned General Tire and Rubber, and they owned WOR in New York and a number of other stations. It was pretty well run, and I secured a job through a family connection with Jack Downey, who was a well-known disc jockey in the area. And there, that was a union station. Things were a lot, the pay was better. I spun records, did a lot of news. We carried the Red Sox, and so I had a little sports show before and after the Red Sox game. We had a 6'4" station manager named Fred Wagenvoord. And there, I also had, incidentally, had a symphony show, as I did at HAY. The symphony show would go on right after the 11 o'clock news, would be like about 11:15 to 1 a.m. And then I'm the guy that locked up the station. The shift that I worked was mainly 3 to closing or something like that. And there's a little overtime, and every now and then you get to do some commercials, so that'd be a few extra bucks.
Again, John Ellinger.
And it carried the Yankee News Network. And I was selected to do a 5-minute program which came down from Boston at 12 o'clock. We connected with the news, and I did that for approximately 6 months. I think I was totally unqualified for it, but they wanted someone immediately to go on the air with it, and I was there just reading some paper or something, and they said, okay, you're on the air. And that's how that began, and it was very interesting, and I enjoyed the work there quite a bit.
Again, Bill Hennessy.
It's one of the cute stories about ONS, which I don't know to be true, but it's such a great story, I'd love to tell it. They had an afternoon disc jockey when they weren't carrying Mutual or whatever other network stations and soap operas and things that they had to take. Jack Lacey would do a music show called Listen to Lacey. And supposedly, the story goes as follows. He tried to get a $5 raise from WONS in Hartford, and they turned him down. So he went to WINS in New York and became Listen to Lacey on WINS, which was one of the powerhouse stations and still is in New York, but it was music back in those days. It was the counterpart to WNEW, which was, in my opinion, the best radio station of all time, right, as far as independents. And these were independent stations.
Joe Durand also worked there. When I was a little kid, I remember we always used to listen to Joe Durand on the radio in the morning, doing his morning show.
John Fleming.
And I think he was on WONS. You can correct me on that. I'm not quite sure. But he was a regular guest and, you know, in our home every morning.
Guy Hedlund, who once directed the Guy Hedlund Players Dramatic Group on WTIC, later did a series of dramatic programs on WONS.
We know a story. And now WONS presents Guy Hedlund and Dolores Murphy in an unusual presentation of We Know a Story.
Good evening. Tonight, Dolores Murphy and I, Guy Hedlund, would like to tell you a very unusual little story by Marcel Prevost, famous French author.
It's called The Happy Couple. And as usual, Mr. Hedlund will do most of the telling, and I'll come in to add to the dramatic action. Why do you want to marry me?
Because I love you.
But I don't love you. Why don't you marry my sister? She's crazy about you.
I don't want to marry Clemens. She's not the one I love. It's you I want.
But you're just not my kind of man. You're dull and studious. And I want someone who's gay and full of life.
I'll do everything I can to please you. I'll give you a nice home, pretty clothes, everything to make you happy. Is something troubling you?
I'm going to leave you.
Oh, no, Lucy. No, you can't do that.
Why not? What are you to me? Just a man who buys my clothes and gives me a home. That's all you are. That's all you've ever been or ever could be. Well, that's not enough for me. I've got to have love. And at last I've found it.
And you'd give up all that? All this for that?
Next week, WONS will again present Guy Hedlund and a talented young lady of his company in an interesting presentation of a famous short story. Listen for We Know a Story. There's the Guy Hedlund Players, heard each Tuesday evening over WONS at 8. This half-hour program features members of the Guy Hedlund Dramatic Group in well-known radio plays. Then on Wednesday evenings at 10:30, WONS presents Guy Hedlund in the program The Greatest Thing in the World, a half-hour of music and poetry reading by Mr. Hedlund.
Fred Swanson.
One of the big afternoon disc jockeys on WONS was Jack Downey, related to Morton Downey.
Again, Jack Borden.
He was a nephew of the famous Irish tenor, Morton Downey.
Jack Downey. He was very popular in the 50s. Very popular.
He was called J.D., your DJ. Jack Downey was a disc jockey. He was not management at the time. And he was good. He was great on the air. He had a big audience.
I went to work at WONS in Hartford as a singer.
Jack Downey.
And I was singing with a band at the Bond Hotel. I was working there with the Paul Landerman Band. And while I was there, WONS was getting a new manager. And he saw me performing, and he liked it. So he hired me to be a singer. And the show, I worked with a girl. I've forgotten her name. And she and I were on opposite Robert Merrill, of all people, of the opera. And our show lasted 13 weeks. And then he said, hey, how would you like to become an announcer?
Wow.
So I said, oh, God, I'd love that. So I auditioned, and the guy who auditioned me, I'll never forget this, he said, you know, Jack, he said, when you're doing this, you either have it or you don't have it. And I hate to say this to you, but you don't have it, period. A year later, I was program director of that station. He was no longer working there. So anyway, that's how I got into it. That's a long story. At ONS, it was great. It was my start. That was 1948. 1948, my God, yeah. And the guy's name was Bob Manby. He was the new manager, and he was a super guy. He and his wife were such lovely, lovely people. And, I mean, they were a pleasure to work for, and I just loved it. And I started as an announcer, and then I had a show, and I had a record show, because in those days, it was run kind of like a network. It was run by the Mutual Broadcasting System, to be exact. And so we didn't have a lot of personal shows. And then after a year or two went by, then we started doing things, and I had a disc jockey show called J.D. or DJ, and I had a band do the intro for us, the Henry Jerome Band down in New York. My theme song of J.D., your DJ is ready to go, music for you on the Jack Downey Show, blah, 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 you know, stuff like that. And we had a great time, and it was a pleasure. It was a wonderful station, a lot of good people there. Roy Hansen and Art Ashley. Art Ashley later went to Boston, one of the big stations up there. Art had a phenomenal voice. I mean, just, you know, it boomed. C.P. Patterson.
Again, Bill Hennessy.
Crane Patterson was his full name.
C.P. Patterson. Was there.
C.P. Patterson.
Rusty Potts.
He used to sing When the Red, Red Robin Goes Bob, Bob, Bobbing Along with his piano, Esmeralda.
There's a fellow by the name of C.P. Patterson.
Again, John Fleming.
Who worked out of a studio, I think it was down at Pratt Street in Hartford, because I can remember as a little kid at some point being down there shopping with the family and looking up, and I actually saw him sitting in the window at his piano. And he was a singing weatherman. I don't know if you've ever come across a singing weatherman before, but CP, or Seeps, I think he liked to be called, Charles Crane Patterson, I think was his formal name, would sit there and sing a little ditty and introduce his weather forecast. He'd sing, let's get together and talk about the weather. We'll get together and talk about it for a while. Let's see, is rain going to fall? Will the sun shine at all? What'll it be? Plink, plink, you know, on the keyboard. Let's see. And then he'd vamp some chords, and he'd talk about the weather. He'd give the weather forecast. How cool is that? I just thought that was the coolest thing.
This is WGTH Radio Hartford, 9 o'clock. News, while it is news, the Yankee Network.
Bill Hennessy.
WGTH, which stood for the General Tire and Hartford Times. It was a combination of WTHT and ONS that merged together.
Dick Bertel.
At that time, WGTH was owned by General Tire Corporation, and that accounts for their call letters.
Al Cohen.
WGTH, which stood for General Teleradio, merged with The Hartford. The letters got merged in there somehow.
And this was a combination of two stations. It was WTHT, which was The Hartford Times, and WONS. And they combined for the purpose of putting on a television station, which turned out to be Channel 18.
That was WGTH.
They became WGTH. They were the ABC and Mutual affiliate. They were on Pratt Street at the time.
So at 57 Pratt Street on the second floor.
Right in downtown Hartford.
And time now to make room for Bob and Ray. But we'll be back at 8:10 this morning with part two of the show. We'd like to have you along. So if you're around, plan to join us here at Radio Ringside, 1410 on the dial, or Monday morning from 5:35 to 6:45. Have yourselves a nice day. So long for now. Our music was on record. Serving the capital area, WGTH, Radio Hartford.
We had a good location as far as a radio station is concerned. WGTH was at 1410 on the dial, where you'll find WPOP today.
This is The Uprising, part two of the show. Until 9 o'clock this morning, we're going to have lots of things for you. This is Dick Richards, with music on record and voices in part transcribed.
Again, Dick Bertel.
I did the morning show, and that ran from, I believe, 6 to 10. And in addition to that, I did some remote broadcasts that were interesting. I covered the Christmas Carol concert of the Hartford Times in 1955 for WGTH. The singers and the performers were on the steps of the Hartford Times building, and that was exciting. I also did a show from the Brown Thompson department store. Brown Thompson's. We originated a live amateur hour, I would say, every Saturday morning with youngsters performing on the radio. That ran, I think, from 10:15 to 10:45. And we'd have to go over there with a remote gear and set up and do that broadcast.
The station is WGTH Radio Hartford. Music on record. In just a moment, it's back to The Uprising. But first,
listen carefully to this important announcement from Charles Gadsden. Charles Gadsden must pay tax on every car in inventory at year's end, and right now his stock is bulging with first-choice used cars and trucks. Therefore, all this week through Saturday, Charles Gadsden is blasting prices, and you, his friends, reap the benefits. Charles Gadsden, Church Corners, Connecticut Boulevard, East Hartford, open till 9 evenings.
Thank you, Steve.
At WGTH, I followed Dick Bertel as the morning man there. That was in 1955.
Steve Gilmartin.
It was a mixed bag, and it was a very interesting mixed bag. We did the morning show beginning at 6 in the morning, and we did an hour of music and news and the like, a typical morning type of show. And then we ran Bob and Ray for an hour, and we did drop-ins in Bob and Ray. And then we went back really local at 8 o'clock and did the Yankee Network News out of Boston, which was a 15-minute program of news at 8, and it ran till 8:15, and then we did a bit of local news there, and then back to our music. It was Sinatra and Nelson Riddle type of stuff, and nothing really off the wall, but stuff that was current.
All right, now, put yourself
together. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you. This is Luncheon with Donnie and Dick until 1 o'clock. Today we're back to our old time.
Yes, indeed we are.
And we've got a lot of things for you in the way of items and music, too, which is on record. And this first portion of our broadcast is brought to you with the good wishes of Burrell Furniture Company at 150 Main Street in Windsor Lux.
Yes, and the slogan at the Burrell Furniture Company is, "You name it, we'll get it." And by gee, they've been proving it, too.
Again, Dick Bertel.
It later moved over to the Channel 18 building while I was still there. So we were operating out of a radio studio in the Channel 18 building, which was on, I believe, Asylum.
Bob Ellsworth.
That's where the TV studios were. They needed lots of big rooms,
mm-hmm.
so they couldn't confine themselves to the small area that GTH radio took up because there just wasn't any room. So if you had two shifts and you were working for both stations that day, they'd fix it so that you were all set when you were through with your radio stint and then go down the street to Channel 18 and work the rest of your balance. TV didn't start till 5 o'clock in the afternoon, so you did earlier shift in the afternoon on radio, and then you went down and did your night shift at the TV station. GTH Radio, I was doing a late night record show there, and when we got down to television, Dick Bertel was with me at the time, too, because we were both staffing at GTH.
But I'm thinking of people like Jack Borden, who went on to work at WBZ in Boston in later years.
Jack Borden, a name that people may remember, was in the afternoon with the movies, signing on the kids' shows.
Uh-huh.
And I was the weatherman. I got a position as a weatherman and a sports director at GTH. They needed to put it together in a hurry. So we had to work with film and edit the show and get it on the air, you know. It was pickup and manual with film in those days, you know, no tape.
In 1956, WGTH Radio became WPOP, but that's another story. This program is dedicated to those who participated in interviews but who passed away before the program was finished. Bob Ellsworth, Lonnie Jerev, Jack Lenhoff, Fred Swanson, John Ellinger, Ivor Hugh, Jack Breitman, air name Jack Brooks, Jack Downey, Charlie Norwood,
After 6 hours of school, I had enough for the day. I hit the radio dial and tuned it up all the way. I got a dance.
Connecticut Radio Memories, Episode 5. This program was produced and edited by Brandon Camp. Thanks to everyone who participated in interviews for this series, including those whose comments didn't make it to air. Interviews were edited for time, continuity, and clarity. This series would not have been possible without the air check collectors and other people and organizations who had the foresight to save air checks, jingles, or theme songs, and who shared them with us, including Ed Bruder from ManForMars.com, Rick Kelly of Northeast Air Checks, John Ramsey of HartfordRadioHistory.com, Dick Bertel, Larry Titus, Doug Main, Ivor Hugh, Al Cohen, the Savitt Collection of the Connecticut Historical Society, Ken and Bonnie Beatrice and Barbara Manston, Sam Pasco, Bill Davies. Special thanks also to J. David Golden for helping us duplicate old transcription discs. We want to send a shout out to Bill Hennessy and the bunch of old broadcasters who meet monthly to hear the Hartford Jazz Orchestra play at the Arch Street Tavern. Special thanks also to John Ramsey. Connecticut Radio Memories was produced at the studios of WWUH-FM. At the University of Hartford. When I feel put down, I try to shake it off good with my